It's the Painless Living Show with host and pain treatment expert, Dr. Cassaro, and co-host, Dennis Bergmeier. If you or someone you love suffers from chronic pain, get answers here. Call now, 888-440-4442. That's 888-440-4442. Or visit us online, painlesslivingradio.com.
And good morning.
Good morning to you, too.
How was everyone this morning?
Well, so far the day is beautiful.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Let's hope it stays that way, and let's hope that anybody out there that is suffering with chronic pain, we can help make their day brighter, too.
Definitely. And you heard the number, 888-440-4442. You can call in. The topic that we have today is arthritis, but we will accept phone calls and counsel for whatever pain you may be
feeling. Any kind of chronic pain, and it doesn't just have to be your pain. If you have a relative or neighbor suffering from chronic pain, you can call on their behalf.
That's right. You can help some folks out who may be a little too shy to call on their own or whatever. But again, 888-440-4442. You can also at times too check us out on the web at painlessliving.com. And you can,
that's right. There's also a contact form there.
Right.
Send us your detailed questions.
Right.
All questions get answered, and occasionally we'll read one on the air.
As we are about to do right now.
Oh.
How about
go see? Right ahead.
I learned that in DJ school. That's called a segue. All right. Here's the question that we have received today about arthritis. The person says, I have arthritis really bad all over. My fingers all point in unnatural directions. I have had both my knees replaced and my left hip. The right hip is scheduled to be replaced in May. My neck is stiff and sore all the time. My low back kills me. Now, I had back surgery in 1969. It did pretty well until the early 90s, but it's been over 20 years of steadily increasing pain. My elbows and ankles are always sore. Excuse me. My shoulders are so stiff, I couldn't comb my hair if I still had any.
I hope this is a man.
I hope so, too. The pictures I'm conjuring in my head here. Now, the steel joints don't hurt. I love them. But what can I do for my other joints? I know they all can't be replaced. I'm on lots of arthritis medicine. I realize how well that works when I forget to take it. But I still suffer when I take it. The pain medicine constipated me too much. I had to stop taking it. What else is there? I heard you talking about topical medicine. Will that work for me?
Okay, that's a good question. He specifically asked about topical medicine, but I think there's a whole lot more that we can talk about with this type of arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got it pretty bad.
It sounds it.
The topical medicine he's asking about, it works really well for joints that are right under the skin.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to help too much for that hip joint that he's planning to have, or I guess he's already had it replaced by now because mm-hmm. we're past May.
Right.
But for the joints in his hands, elbows, any ankles maybe, any joint that's right under the skin, the topical medicine works really well, because it'll soak right through the skin and get more medicine into that joint than you could ever get taking a pill by mouth and hoping mm-hmm. for a little bit of that medicine to circulate to that painful joint.
Right. Now, are you talking over-the-counter topical medicines or prescription topicals?
Actually, there's both.
Okay.
I think because he was referring to something I was talking about on the air, he's talking about the prescription medicines. And a lot of those are actually the same medicines that you can take by mouth.
Mm-hmm.
There's also over-the-counter topical medicines. The two biggest classes that those fall in are the anti-inflammatory medicines, things mm-hmm. like Aspirin cream,
mm-hmm.
and then medications that either lubricate the joints or help with removing inflammatory mediators that keep things stirred up. Those would be things like a lot of these muscle rubs that you see on the store okay. shelves, sports rubs, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's kind of a subset of that that have capsaicin or some sort of hot pepper component that actually work to desensitize the nerves. And, of course, those of us that played sports in high school, we all remember the atomic bomb that they used to rub on joints and muscles and every place else after a rigorous practice or a game that had capsaicin in it.
Okay.
And then the over-the-counter capsaicin creams that you can put pretty much anywhere. They're not toxic. You can use them fairly indiscriminately. The only thing you have to really be careful with is getting it on the tips of your fingers, because then anything you touch, like rubbing your eye, you might all of a sudden have hot pepper in your eye.
Yeah.
That'll get your attention. Take your mind off the aching joint,
off the other pain,
though.
Yes, it certainly will. And that's the voice of experience speaking right there, you can tell. Is arthritis a unavoidable consequence of growing old?
To an extent, yes. There's the type of arthritis that you just get because of a lot of passage of time and a lot of heavy use. That type of arthritis, though, is usually not leading to the situation that this man that wrote this question is in. That type of arthritis is usually where you're a little stiff in the morning. Once you get up and get moving, you do all right. The arthritis that gets to be crippling is usually the result of an injury or the result of some sort of problem in the metabolism that either accelerates the degeneration or has some sort of promoting inflammation or decreasing the healing responses, things that are abnormal that lead to accelerated pain.
So when you attack the arthritis, do you attack the elements that speed up the metabolism part that you're referring to?
Well, that's always, when people come into my office, that's always one of the things I check.
Okay.
Because there are certain common things, probably the most common thing that most of our audience could probably think of if they had to, would be people with diabetes tend to get worse pain from their arthritis. Looking at their x-rays, their arthritis might not even be that bad, but it tends to hurt them a lot more than someone with very similar history and physical findings that doesn't have arthritis. They tend to have less pain from it.
Now, is that a result of the diabetes itself or the medications used to treat the diabetes?
It's more that the changes that the diabetes makes in the metabolism promotes inflammation.
Okay.
And also changes the way nerves function, so you get kind of a double whammy there. And then there are other health problems. Probably the second most common health problem after diabetes that causes arthritis to hurt a lot is thyroid problems. And that can be either overactive or underactive. But I probably see 50 people with underactive thyroid for every one person that I see with overactive thyroid that leads to increased pain.
Wow. I find that to be surprising. I guess only because as a civilian, you don't hear of underactive thyroid problems very often. You're familiar with overactive. But
you know, that's true. There's not really anything that they're advertising on TV, so...
There you go.
You don't hear about it very much.
Exactly. That's where we get most of our medical information, because the New England Journal of Medicine subscription ran out a couple months ago, and I just never renewed it.
They don't have a channel either.
No, they don't. They don't at all. One of the things here, that there are medications that can make your diabetes worse.
Well, the arthritis.
The arthritis, yes.
Yeah. There are. For the most part, though, that's things that treat other diseases end up making arthritis worse.
Gotcha.
And probably the top of that list are two medicines that are among the most frequently prescribed medicines in the country.
Okay.
Your cholesterol medicines
and
your acid blockers.
Oops.
And the two of them together is a particularly bad combination. So if you've got painful arthritis, that's a situation where the medicine that treats other conditions makes your arthritis worse. But chances are the same things that are making your cholesterol go up and giving you heartburn are also making your arthritis worse. So if you
which circles around to the diet component here.
Yeah, so, you know, there's another way that you can kill two birds with one stone. I was looking for the saying.
Yes.
Skin two cats. It just wasn't going to work.
No. Not in this day and age. ASPCA doesn't like that. Forgive my ignorance, but what are nightshade vegetables? You have here that nightshade vegetables can make arthritis worse also.
Okay, with a particular type of arthritis called rheumatoid arthritis.
Okay.
That's an autoimmune condition. And people with rheumatoid arthritis tend to be particularly susceptible to tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, and eggplant. Those are the nightshade vegetables.
Okay.
Wow. Here's the thing. Most of the time, those are their favorite foods.
Definitely.
Especially the tomatoes and potatoes.
Exactly. Exactly. Because the diet for most diseases basically just is very simple. It says if you like it, you can't have it.
Well, I love tomatoes and peppers and eggplant.
Yes.
But it's most people tolerate those vegetables just fine. Mm-hmm. It's if you've got those particular, if you're particularly susceptible.
Right.
Like I said, people with rheumatoid arthritis. And then just some other people on a genetic basis, they inherit some sensitivity to those plants, that it'll make their arthritis worse. Now, it's not like you eat a potato, you eat French fries now, and all of a sudden your arthritis gets worse.
Right.
It's when the potatoes, the French fries at lunch, the mashed potatoes at supper, the tomato sauce on the pasta, all that stuff,
it adds
as part of a regular part of your diet,
right,
your arthritis is going to hurt worse. When you stop those things, take them out of your diet completely, over a period of a few weeks, the pain in your arthritis will subside. And then if you have a French fry or a slice of tomato with something, it's probably not going to bother you.
Right.
But it's when it becomes a regular part of the diet that it gradually increases and you tell a big difference.
But then again, as we always say, anything worth doing is worth overdoing. So, you know,
I like that.
Now, you just mentioned rheumatoid arthritis, and you know, being a golf fan, we see these advertisements with Phil Mickelson now about psoriatic arthritis. Is it, did I pronounce that correctly? How many different types of arthritis are there?
Well, you could
approximately,
almost, you know, there's
don't
types,
take your shoes
and
off,
then there's
and
subtypes, and then it depends on how many hairs you want to split.
Okay.
There, I tried to oversimplify it at the beginning and make it sound like there were two types: the degenerative arthritis and the autoimmune arthritis. And there kind of are, but you can divide that autoimmune arthritis into rheumatoid arthritis, psoriatic arthritis, and then there's others.
Right.
There's the ankylosing spondylitis, and there's, you can go down a long list. You get to a point where I'm not sure that it makes any difference how much further you subdivide, because the management and treatment gets to be pretty much the same, whether it's A or B. But for most people, there's arthritis you get from injuries, arthritis you get from the things that might be poorly regulated in your metabolism, and then the arthritis that you get from an autoimmune condition, which is kind of part of that poor metabolic regulation.
And if you had, let's say, some other autoimmune condition, does that make you more susceptible to getting the autoimmune-caused arthritis?
Good question. Yes.
Okay.
All the autoimmune conditions are probably related to each other. So if you have one, you probably have components of most of the others, too.
Because of the causality of
all the same. It's the immune system attacking parts of your body.
That's depressing. 888-440-4442 is our phone number here on Painless Living Show. Whether it be arthritis pain or any type of pain, if you'd like to talk to the doctor, he is in and available. Give us a holler. We'll be right back.
To To learn more about the topics or products mentioned on the program, visit our website, painlessliving.com.
Of course, the topic for this morning is arthritis, yet any pain question you may have will be entertained and handled expertly by Dr. Cassaro at 888-440-4442.
That's right. We'll take all pain questions.
Let's see.
On a Saturday morning. With no waiting.
None whatsoever. No copays, no anything. In the email question that we started off the show with, the writer was talking about having had both knees and one hip replaced. Well, probably by now it's been both hips replaced. Joint replacement sounds a little severe. How bad does the arthritis have to be, or the pain have to be, before you suggest that people go for the joint replacement?
That's a tough question for me to answer on a personal basis, because I don't have any trouble with joint pain.
Right.
But I do see patients in here all the time that are young, mm-hmm. too young to get a joint replacement, and their whole life seems to be revolving around when they're old enough to finally get that joint replaced. And of course, what I'm working with them on is trying to get ways to mitigate their pain mm-hmm. until they can get that joint replacement.
Right.
And then if I get really good results from the treatment with them, when they get old enough to have that joint replacement, they'll decide they might not need it anymore.
Right.
Now, that has happened, but not, I don't want to make it sound like that's every patient that comes in the door. But invariably, once I see people that have had their joint replacements, all of them, even the ones that have had some complications, seem to say that they're glad they got the mm-hmm. joint replaced, because even with the stiffness or whatever it is that follows a complication, they still say it's better than when it was severe pain.
Yeah, I can imagine.
So by and large, I'd say from a customer service standpoint, mm-hmm. joint replacement surgery has a really strong following. People are very grateful for it.
For the benefit of those listening who are asking this question, which I can feel them asking, is how old is old enough to get a joint replacement?
Well, I'll answer that. But first, I want to say why it is that they consider how old. I mean, certainly if you are young and you mm-hmm. have a devastating injury, you'll get a joint replacement.
Okay.
If it means saving you from a wheelchair.
Right.
But the problem is that the joints, the artificial joints, wear out.
Mm.
Under the best of circumstances, you have a life expectancy of that artificial joint maybe around 15 years, just for a rule of thumb. Mm-hmm. Well, you could have that redone. Usually it can be redone once.
Yeah.
The redo joint the second time doesn't last as long as the first one. Okay. So you're talking maybe 25 years.
Gotcha.
On artificial joints. So the worst possible outcome is for you to outlive
your
joints, because then there's not a lot of options after that.
Yeah.
So what they try to do is take the average life expectancy and back that up. So somewhere around 55, maybe 60, early 50s if you're really in bad shape. Much younger than that, they try to find ways to
alleviate,
postpone
the pain.
It until you get in that age group. Now, that's all kind of rule of thumb stuff. Every individual is considered, well, it used to be in the past, every individual was considered on the basis of what their presentation is. But these days, we're getting to more and more boilerplate stuff where there's a certain age and then you qualify.
Right. It's in and out. Now, another treatment you have in the list of things here is, you know, the surgery we talked about, joint replacement, braces, massage. But I guess the question is that the treatment would depend on, again, whether it was a degenerative or autoimmune caused, or are they both treated the same?
Well, maybe so, but doesn't have to be. For instance, we were talking about how to postpone having to postpone the pain until you can have the surgery. One of the things that tends to work pretty well for people with either knee pain or hip pain, and they're too young to have a joint replacement, or maybe they're too sick. They're not a candidate for being put under anesthesia because of other health problems.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah.
What can be done is to burn the little nerves that go into those joints so that the person can't feel the pain from the joint anymore. And that tends to work really well, but it doesn't do anything to treat the underlying condition. So you still be stiff.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't change the stiffness, but it won't hurt. And
okay.
That can be done. It's called radio frequency neurolysis. We've talked about that for other types of pain, but
right.
It works well for arthritis, no mm-hmm. matter what the cause of the arthritis is.
Right.
The thing that limits it is there's only certain joints you can use it on. You can't use it on every joint.
Okay.
And there are reasons for that. There's a couple of different ones. One is if the nerve that goes to the joint has muscle function also, we don't want to destroy muscle function.
No.
So we won't be able to do that nerve. The other thing is once you get out into the fingers, the radio frequency probe is too big and causes too much collateral damage, shall
okay.
we say,
mm-hmm.
to be using it on the nerves to the little joints in the fingers.
Maybe we should back up a little bit and just the quick synopsis version of exactly what is arthritis.
Okay, good idea. The arthritis is where you have something going wrong in the joint and your body responds with inflammation, which is usually the normal part of a healing process.
Mm-hmm.
Only for some reason you get stuck in that healing process at the inflammation stage.
It goes no further.
And arthritis is just foreign language for inflamed joint.
Okay.
Okay. So the inflamed joint hurts. Over time, you get scarring from that chronic inflammation. And that's when the joints tend to get really stiff, and that's when they get real knobby
mm-hmm.
and enlarged. But the pain continues to come from the inflammation.
Gotcha. So then even arthritis can come from, you know, is it a normal extension of carpal tunnel if you don't take care of it? Because it can come from repetitive actions, you know, sitting at your computer and things like that over a long period of time, can it not?
Well, yeah, the carpal tunnel syndrome, though, is actually compressing the nerves that go
right.
down into your hand. The arthritis, for a lot of people, doesn't hurt at all. It's the enlargement of the joints is painless, but
okay.
it's where those joints enlarge to the point where they start pinching that nerve.
Mm-hmm.
The nerve pain gets the attention long before the arthritis pain would.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, and that's a problem with arthritis in the spine also. A lot of times it's not the arthritis that's mm-hmm. causing the pain as much as it is the pinched nerves.
Right.
Now, the garden variety back pain is from arthritis. Mm-hmm. But if you have something like sciatica,
okay.
that's where the nerve being pinched hurts much worse than the
right.
arthritis.
How difficult is that for a physician to determine at quick glance?
Well, at a quick glance, very difficult.
Okay.
You really have to touch someone. You have to do an examination.
Right.
And that's one of the problems with the way a lot of things are done these days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get too negative, but a lot of times you go into the doctor, you complain of pain in your back and pain going down your leg, and instead of touching you with his hands, he writes out a prescription for an MRI.
Yeah.
And then when the MRI comes back showing a black disc, he writes another referral note for you to go see a surgeon.
Right.
And there's a lot of steps that get skipped over.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunate, but that happens a lot. And then a big part of what my practice is based on is all the people that went that route, only that wasn't the problem or the
mm-hmm.
cure, and now they're coming to see me with the same problem that they started with,
right?
But now they've got surgery under their belt too,
and they'll be able to handle it a little bit better. And I have to ask, being, you know, a child of the 70s, man, sugar. Why is sugar so bad? And it seems to be no matter what you have, if you just eliminate sugar from your diet, you're going to feel better.
Well, that's a pretty good rule of thumb.
Yeah. But, I mean, come on. I can't,
it's bad news.
I can't live without my Frosted Flakes, Doc. Come on.
Well,
man.
You know, it's a white crystalline powder from a plant that grows in the tropics. Now, most of those other white crystalline powders from plants that grow in the tropics are illegal.
Are illegal, yeah. Yeah. Extremely. I never quite looked at it that way. Wow. Now you've ruined my Frosted Flakes for me.
Most of the changes in the metabolism that I was talking about before,
right,
that can lead to arthritis and lead to a lot of other degenerative problems, most of those, even if they're not caused by sugar makes them much worse.
Mm-hmm.
So it turns out that one of the best things you can do for your overall health is to limit or even eliminate,
mm-hmm,
added sugar.
But then artificial sweeteners are not very good for arthritis either, according
to
the
they're bad there. But for a different reason.
Yeah.
The artificial sweeteners are neurotoxic. They, mm-hmm, they poison your nerves. They cause things like Alzheimer's disease.
Oh.
Okay. So,
if
you're...
Can't win for losing here.
If you're dependent upon that sweet taste,
mm-hmm,
there's not a whole lot of options for you that aren't like playing Russian roulette.
Yeah, well, that kind of depresses me at breakfast time here. 888-440-4442. The topic is arthritis, but any pain question you have, feel free to give us a call. The doctor would be more than happy to answer your questions for you this morning here on...
It's the Painless Living Show. To be part of the program, call now. 1-888-440-4442.
And the topic of this morning here, arthritis. But yes, we'll talk to you about anything.
And the show is about half over now. So, mm-hmm, if you're suffering with chronic pain, this would be a good time to get on the
right
line and call in so that you don't have to suffer for another week. We'll give you pain treatment information that you can start using today.
Immediately, if not sooner. You know, one of the treatments for a lot of pain, including the arthritis, some of the arthritis situations, is exercise. But how can you convince yourself to exercise when everything hurts when you're standing still, and it's going to hurt worse when you start exercising?
You know, that's a good question, and there actually is a good way. If you're hurting so much when you're standing still that you can't bear the thought of getting out and doing any exercise,
mm-hmm,
exercising in the water is probably a good way to start. Now, we're at the end of our swimming season here, so, mm-hmm, we're talking about for the next 8 months anyway, it's going to be an indoor pool.
Yeah.
But when you're in the water supports your body, and you'll find that you can do a whole lot of things. You can be more flexible and do things without hurting in the water that you could never do on dry land.
Plus, I'd imagine the extra resistance of the water when you're moving at things would help.
Oh, it's a good way to get exercise.
Yeah.
Yes. It's not really a second rate. It's, mm-hmm, just that when you're in the water, you can get started. And then once you get started and start getting the benefits of the exercise in the water, it makes it easier then to be able to continue exercise outside the water. Now, that's not going to be this week in the pool and next week I'm out on the track.
Yeah.
No, unless you're talking about the racetrack at the Paramutual window.
Right.
No, if you're starting out in the pool and you're starting from that type of a condition where, mm-hmm, you can hardly stand up, then it might be a year or more of,
right,
exercising in the pool before we're talking about doing anything meaningful, up walking and being able to go through the grocery store without leaning on the cart,
yeah,
or using the electric scooter.
Yeah, exactly, which just is kind of a vicious cycle, kind of exacerbates the lack of exercise when you don't even walk through the grocery store aisles. Does the difference of warm water or cold water in a pool make any difference? And like, would a heated pool be better than one that's just normal?
Well, I'm telling you personal preference right now. I really like the feel of those warm water pools. It's like bath water.
It is.
The typical hot pool, warm pool for exercise is about 96 degrees, and it does feel like bath water, and it really feels good.
Yeah.
A heated pool, just a standard heated pool like you'd get at the YMCA or something like that, is usually 85 degrees. 85-degree water is not cold enough to get the benefit from cold water if there is a benefit to be had there. And it's not quite warm enough to really be comfortable for people that are cold sensitive. Mm-hmm. For most people, especially kids, they have no temperature receptors that 85-degree water is fine for them. If you're in the water and you're exercising, 85-degree water is fine. But if you're just getting in the water and moving around, 85-degree water is probably going to feel rather cool, especially if you've got a health condition like, for instance, fibromyalgia, where you're very cold sensitive. Mm-hmm. That 85-degree water is going to feel like ice water. Mm. So that's when you need to find that either 92-degree water, which is a hot pool or a therapy pool, or 96-degree water, which is a hot pool.
Or, and the, then you or could, the Gulf of Mexico.
And the, yeah, that works too. And you could go up a step above that into a hot tub.
Hot tub, yeah.
And it's hard to exercise in a hot tub, but the water is nice and warm, and if you throw some Epsom salts in there, you'll get some of the benefit there that can really help to reduce arthritis pain quite a bit.
So I would a hot bath in Epsom salts just prior to bed be a good idea?
Because that's an excellent recommendation, especially for people that have trouble falling asleep, because you kill two birds with one stone. The magnesium from the Epsom salts not only helps with the arthritis pain and as a muscle relaxant, but it also helps with sleep. Helps calm your brain down so you don't have all those racing thoughts keeping you awake.
Yeah.
Makes it real easy to fall asleep. And a lot of times that can get you into a deeper plane of sleep, so that even later on in the night, if you tend to wake up, if you're starting out in a deeper plane of sleep, it might be easier for you to just roll over and get back to sleep.
That's always good.
Where a lot of people sleep so light that once they wake up, they're awake
and
they can't get back to sleep.
Yeah. Now, we badmouth certain elements of your diet a lot that can exacerbate pain. But on the other side of that coin, are there, like, supplements or things that you can take nutrition-wise to help alleviate arthritis?
Yes, there are. And there's a pretty good regimen of things you can take. But before I start giving that, I want to say that more important is getting the garbage out of your diet.
Okay.
Because if you're living on dessert and adding your fish oil and your glucosamine and your mineral supplements, you're the guy that other people are going to hear saying, oh, I tried all that stuff. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Forget the pie and try it that way.
Yeah. Right. So it's more important to get the garbage out of your diet.
Okay.
Then to enhance the benefit of having the bad stuff gone, there's good stuff that you can put in that will have a much better benefit than if you do it while you're still living on dessert.
Right.
Fish oil is at the top of that list.
Okay.
And a good quality fish oil is important, because you can get fish oil fairly inexpensive. The problem is that if you're going to take that for a long period of time, it's likely to have a lot of contaminants in it. These days, even our oceans are not very clean. So you want to have fish oil that's not full of the results of our industrial
stuff,
life on land, that the fish are absorbing. So get a good quality fish oil. And then, thank you for interrupting.
You're quite welcome.
I see that we have a caller waiting on the line. I was so interested in going on with the nutritional supplements. We'll get back to that later.
Yes.
We're going to go to Mary calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Mary, you're on the line at the Painless Living Show. How can I help you this morning?
Hello. I can barely hear you, but I have recently noticed that my on one of my hands, one of my fingers is getting locked in place, and I can only get it unlocked by reaching with my other hand to unlock it. And the only change in some medications I have was in a blood pressure medication my doctor changed me from. I had slightly elevated high blood pressure, and he changed me to an amlodipine. And it has only been since I started taking that that this has started happening. I was wondering if that could happen. Now, I am a diabetic, type 1 diabetic, long-term, never been overweight day in my life.
Okay. Well, first, I want to say I'm sorry to keep you waiting on the line. I hadn't noticed you were there. But now that you're on the line, I'm going to see what I can do to help you. The amlodipine doesn't have a direct side effect that caused that. What you have is what we call, what we refer to as a trigger finger. And the amlodipine doesn't cause that directly, but what it could be is that because your metabolism is kind of already a little bit off balance with the diabetes, it kind of changed the balance just enough where something that was not enough to cause the trigger finger to be symptomatic, it now is. And the most likely place for that is in your neck. The nerve that goes to that finger is probably being irritated in your neck so that that muscle doesn't get a good smooth signal to cause your finger to move. And because the muscle's not working right, it gets locked, and you have to go bend it with the other hand. Now, the solution there is not to go necessarily get surgery on your trigger finger, although that would probably help a lot in the short term. The solution is maybe to find a different medication for your blood pressure. The amlodipine may or may not be, it could be just coincidence, but since you're very certain that this only started after the amlodipine, there are a lot of other blood pressure medicines that can be tried. Some of them in the same type of class that amlodipine is in, and then some in completely unrelated drug classes that can manage mild high blood pressure. And that would be the first benefit. Now, the good thing about amlodipine is that the generic versions are available most places for less than $10 a month. So it's very inexpensive. It's a good one to be on for your benefit of your pocketbook, and some of the other ones might not be as inexpensive, but they'll work just as well. So that'd be the first thing to try.
So this trigger finger is not rheumatoid arthritis?
Oh, probably not. I haven't had the benefit of examining you, but just based on your description, I don't hear anything there that makes me think that it's rheumatoid arthritis. And a lot of times surgery is done for that. If you want to hold through the break, we can discuss a little bit more what those treatment options might be.
Thank you.
Hold on. We'll continue after the break.
And you can join us at 888-440-4442. We will be back after this.
It's like an office visit without the copay. The Painless Living Show.
And we're going to jump right back into it here with Dr. Cassaro.
Yes, we've got Mary hanging on the line. Mary, are you still with me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We were talking about your trigger finger. Which finger is this?
It's the long finger on the left hand.
Okay. Somewhere in your forearm, if you bend that finger just on the inside of your forearm at your wrist, you're going to feel where there's a place where the other end of that tendon is moving up and down. Mm-hmm. As you move your finger. Can you feel that? in your forearm. Anyway, what you want to do is use some topical medications, and you don't need prescription medications for this. The over-the-counter medications will work. Things like the capsaicin or the Aspirin cream, either one. You can put on the place where the tendon feels like it's locked in your hand, and then also on the other end up in your forearm where the other end of that tendon is attached. And you can rub that on, and that can help with the trigger finger. It might also help to get an injection into that tendon. And your family doctor might be able to do this, or an orthopedic doctor could do it. A hand surgeon could do it. A lot of people can do those, pain management doctors. And that's just to get the trigger moving freely again, get the finger moving freely. Other things.
Would that be with a steroid?
It can be either with or without a steroid. Usually if it's with a steroid, you want a very low dose, partly because you are diabetic, but also because if you put a lot of steroid into a tendon, you run the risk of the tendon rupturing. Okay, you don't want that to happen. That's a real problem, especially for a type 1 diabetic. The other thing you can do is get an x-ray of your neck. Find out if you do have a bone spur there. And if so, just getting a traction device to use at home or using an inversion table on a regular basis can relieve that trigger finger where it's hardly any problem for you. All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay. And talk to your doctor first about trying to change the medication, because it could be you just get your metabolism to go into a slightly different balance and the symptoms will disappear. Same way they came on with that medicine, with another medicine, they might go away. All right. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Mary. I might take this opportunity to point out that when you do call, please turn your radio down a little bit.
Yes.
Because there's some
interference in the background. And we're in the last segment of the show right now. So if you want to get a question in this week, this would be a good time to call.
888-440-4442 is the number here.
And we're going to go now to Jim calling from Jeffersonville, Indiana. Jim, you're on the air at the Painless Living Show. How can I help you today?
Well, I hope you can. I have peripheral neuropathy.
Okay.
I am not diabetic. And they don't know the cause, and there apparently is no treatment.
Well, it's not true that there's no treatment. There's a lot of times we never do figure out the cause for peripheral neuropathy, but most of the time that it's not something you can put your finger on easily, like diabetes or chemotherapy or something like that, radiation. Most of the time it's related to some sort of nutritional deficiency. But in any case, there are a lot of good treatments for peripheral neuropathy, and there are medications that can work fairly well. And if nothing else works, there's an implanted device called a spinal stimulator or a neural stimulator, and that's what it treats, and it does an excellent job of treating peripheral neuropathy. Now, the problem with that is it's a permanently implanted device, and a lot of people don't want to take that step. But still, there's things that can be done. Where do you have the neuropathy pain?
Oh, my toes and now my fingers.
Okay, fingers and toes. So this could be, that's the way metabolic neuropathies start. Do you work around any kind of chemicals or ever use a lot of pesticides or herbicides, things like that?
Well, I don't now, but as a kid, I grew up on a farm, and you know, we had fertilizers, we had some farm chemicals, etc.
Well, did you get heavy exposure, anything that ever made you sick?
No.
Okay. I'd be hard-pressed then to sit here and say that that's it. I mean, it could be, but if that was the case, everybody that grew up on a farm might have peripheral neuropathy. But metabolic neuropathies a lot of times start in the fingers and toes, and then they work their way back towards you, the main part of your body. Things, if you've been checked for diabetes, you don't have it, get checked for thyroid disease. There's probably almost as many people with thyroid disease causing neuropathy as there are with diabetes causing neuropathy, but you don't find it if you don't look for it. And then has your doctor tried any prescription medications?
None yet.
Okay. There is a medication that works fairly well for a lot of people, and that's called gabapentin. It's medication that can have some side effects, sedation being probably the biggest one. But for people that aren't susceptible to the sedation, you can take that. It's not toxic. You can take it pretty much with any other medicine. It's not going to interfere. So it's a good starting treatment for neuropathy. Some people can do well with it long term. Other people do need to progress to other medicines that can have more side effects. But that's a good one to start with. What we'll do is actually go talk to your primary care doctor about that. But we'll have some information on our website at painlessliving.com about peripheral neuropathy. And you can see on there about the gabapentin. And the way that's spelled is G-A-B-A, GABA, G-A-B-A, pentin, P-E-N-T-I-N. So it's a prescription medication. It's very inexpensive if you get the generic form, and it works well for a lot of people. All right?
Thank you.
You want to try that? Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Good luck to you, Jim.
All right. 888-440-4442 is the number. And again, as our callers do, you can call with pain unrelated to arthritis, no matter what the topic is here on the show on a given day.
And I just want to comment on one of the statements that Jim made.
Mm-hmm.
He made the statement that there's nothing that could be done for it. If you're listening to this show and you have chronic pain, if somebody has ever told you there's nothing that can be done for it, get another opinion. Find somebody else, because there's always something else that can be done.
Do you find that sometimes there are folks, I'm not going to say in your profession, but folks that like they run out of sympathy, and it's like, I don't want to hear it. You know, take two aspirin, call me in the morning. You know,
well, not just the doctors, but even in your family.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, and that's actually worse, probably, is when it's people in your family that get tired of listening to you.
Yeah. So whenever you need a sympathetic ear, or you need someone to give you advice and someone to assure you that, yes, indeed, there is something that can be done about it.
Oh, are you leading that?
Give us a
buttering
call.
Me up.
Yeah, I am. I am. You got to give the good
going.
Doctor a call.
Keep going. Yeah.
That's what he is here for every Saturday morning. So
we might have enough time for one quick call here, 888-440-4442. If you call now, we can get to you. Otherwise, we'll be back next week, and you'll have to wait an extra week before you can get your pain treatment information.
Exactly. So, you know, why delay? Do it today. But then again, we go back to the basic, and they're always in bold here on the how do you treat the pain situation. Sleep, diet, and exercise.
Well, for arthritis, let me just expand on that a little bit more than we do for some of the other things. Arthritis comes from your body healing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not from the injury. It's the way your body healed that causes the arthritis. Okay?
Okay.
It's your body's healing mechanism at work, and it's not working right.
Right.
So if you want your body's healing mechanism to work right so it doesn't give you painful inflamed joints, you got to eat right so that you don't promote inflammation. That's the sugar that you talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You got to sleep right, because if you're cheating sleep, your body does its maintenance and repair while you're sleeping.
Time. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you're substituting coffee for sleep, better make sure there's something else in that coffee besides just.
Not sugar, though.
Yeah, not sugar. Besides just the coffee beans. And then exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Joints that are moving hurt a whole lot less. than joints that are still.
Right.
So if you're going to sit on the couch until it feels better, guess what? It isn't going to feel better.
You will be waiting. You'll be doing yourself a disservice.
Yes.
Definitely.
It'll be a long wait.
So basically, the bottom line is with the whole sleep, diet, and exercise regimen is when your body is healing, don't do anything to stop it from healing. Let it keep going.
That's right. And help it along the way.
That is it. Again, we appreciate you being here this morning and hope that you will be back next week at the same time. And you can always check out the doctor on his website, too.
That's right. You can also send us a question through the contact form at painlesslivingshow.com.
Mm-hmm.
All of the questions are answered, and we may read your question on the air if it's one that's particularly interesting for our topic.
Exactly. We do look forward to hearing you one way from you, one way or the other, next week when we come back with the Painless Living Show. I am John Ashton.
And I'm your host, Dr. Michael Cassaro. We'll be back 11 to noon every Saturday morning, 11 to noon Eastern time every Saturday morning.
You have a great week. Thanks for listening.